Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is a time of great change at Ohio State University. Joining us today is Ohio State University President E. Gordon Gee, who is very familiar with change. He's been around the block, so to speak. Just to remind folks, before now, he led Vanderbilt University 2001 to 2007, Brown University from 1998 to 2000, the Ohio State University 1990 to 1997, before that, the University of Colorado and West Virginia University. You've had a lot of experience, and is change and a constant. Welcome to the show, E. Gordon Gee.
Well, thank you, Anne. It's always great to be on the station, and of course, we're very proud of the station. It's a university-owned, university-affiliated, and university-proud. And you're doing a great job. I appreciate your work.
Thank you. The Ohio State Board of Trustees Audit and Compliance Committee meets today, and part of that compliance overhaul, according to the Columbus Dispatch, will include developing guidelines on how to manage crisis situations. And now that a little bit of the dust has settled, I'm wondering, how would you characterize how OSU has handled the crisis in athletics this year?
Well, I think that the university has done many things very, very well. Obviously, I'm not free to talk about the NCAA investigation itself because, you know, we're still waiting for the ruling from the NCAA. But I think in terms of the crisis, I would characterize it this way, sort of in kind of three stages. First, I think it was a tsunami. I think we were all overwhelmed by how vastly covered this thing was. It just kind of got out way ahead of us. I think we then pulled ourselves back from the brink of panic and put together a very solid process. I thank our board for being great partners in this effort. Our chairman, Mr. Wexner, was very solid in terms of just making certain that we did not get outside the lines and followed good governance procedures. And then we pressure tested everything. We pressure tested our procedures. We pressure tested our system, our compliance system, a variety of other things. And the net result is the fact that I think we're in many ways in a much stronger position in terms of managing a crisis or managing some of these kinds of issues. Obviously, it has been a raw time for the university. Someone asked me the other day how I felt about it, and I said, well, my world has been divided into two worlds, football and the university. The university is doing extraordinarily well, and our football program caused a great deal of national attention and a great deal of pain, and I want to be very clear about that. This was an embarrassing moment for the university, but on the other hand, we are determined to be better for it.
The compliance overhaul was prompted, of course, by the NCAA rules violation by the members of the football team and the coach. And now the University of Miami is grappling with its own scandal. A now imprisoned former booster claims he improperly treated players to sex parties, nightclub outings, cars, and other gifts to 72 football players and other athletes at Miami for about 8 years. So besides taking the heat of controversy off OSU, does this report and others like it at USC, the University of Tennessee, and et cetera, say anything about a need for an across-the-board overhaul in college athletics?
I think that there's going to be that attempt. You know, I've been very involved with NCAA activity for a very long period of time. In fact, I chaired the first President's Commission, which was the Reform Commission in 1988, which resulted in many of the structural changes that we see now. And I was on the second President's Commission. I just met with a group of presidents, 50 of us met in Indianapolis and with the president of NCAA, Mark Emmert, and really talking about the fact that we need to make certain that we have control of these issues. But the world has also changed. My 30 years as university president, we didn't have things like runners and agents and all this other kind of stuff. It's a dramatically different world, and obviously the instant gratification that can come from Facebook and media responses and so forth. So we need to be very careful about that. Now, I had an opportunity to meet with our football team yesterday just to congratulate them on the beginning of the season, and our coaches were doing a great job. And the thing that I'm constantly reminded of is these are 18 and 19-year-olds, first of all, and so we need to understand that. And secondly of all, I'm also reminded of the fact that 98-99% of those young people that I see in terms of athletic competition are performing at the highest level and in the very best way possible. And so we need to be careful about babies and bathwater. Also, another kind of an interesting point is that the budget for our football program is 1/4 of 1% of the university's overall budget. So you can see sort of the kind of relative relationships that all of these things have.
I was going to ask you maybe what you learned from all of this, but I can't help thinking about your recent absolution from Little Sisters of the Poor in Toledo. And I want you to tell us about
well,
that.
Well, I think that, you know, I make no mistakes for I make no excuses for stupid statements. You know, I'm well known for those. I have my top 10
I think we all learned something from that. I didn't know there was a Little Sisters of the Poor.
No,
either.
I'm quick to admit that always because of the fact that that's just kind of been who I am. You know, if you live by the by your wits, you sometimes die by your wits too. But saying that, I think that I've learned that you know, a good sense of humor is still a valued asset, even when sometimes it does get you into trouble. But secondly, of all, also to be careful about when you're dealing with serious issues, to be very serious about what you're doing. Not everything is at a playful level. And I enjoy my work so much, and I've always said that the kind of the three ingredients for being successful university president are obviously a very thick skin and nerves like sewer pipes, but the most important ingredient is a sense of humor, and hopefully I have regained some of that.
How much more of it would you want to put up with, though? How much longer do you see yourself in this role?
Well, you know, 31 years, I'm the senior guy in this country.
Right.
I've done it longer than anyone else. I have my name on more diplomas than any living
American.
You're a
survivor.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't say myself a survivor. I call myself a thriver. I will do it only as long as I'm enjoying it. I feel very blessed to be doing what I'm doing. And, you know, I honestly feel this way. I feel very blessed to have had a second opportunity at Ohio State. It's a unique American institution. And I think being president of this university at this time in which there is economic challenges in this country and an opportunity to really assert the role of a major American university in terms of leading the economic, cultural, and social change, a word that we used early, is really quite fortunate for me. I get asked this question all the time. You know, why don't you write a book on running universities? Because you've done it more than anyone else and have had more experience. And my answer is the fact that I probably am in the most steep learning curve of my life. I think I'm learning more. I think I am assessing more. I think that I am gaining more from what I'm doing right now than I have done in my 30 years. So I still, as long as I feel like I'm learning, and as long as my health is good, and as long as my energy is good, you know, I run at a very high level of energy. I run, you know, I'm up at 4:30. I'm at bed at 12:30, and in between, I am rock solid in terms of what I'm doing. I'm a workaholic. I don't take that as a point of pride. If there's a Workaholic Anonymous, call in and let me know, because my name is Gordon and I am one. But when I don't feel like I can be as engaged with the university at the level that I'm engaged at the moment, then that is the time for me to try something else. But I will never retire. I am determined that I will do something meaningful for the rest of my life, whatever that meaningful is.
My guest is Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. You know, your questions and comments are welcome. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go on to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. You can tweet us at Ann Fisher WOSU. Lots of options. If you want to speak with or comment on Dr. E. Gordon Gee, OSU president. You have proposed the university require all sophomores to live on campus. The OSU mm-hmm. Board of Trustees could be asked to approve a preliminary design contract in the next few weeks. And not everyone agrees with the idea, not least of which includes university district business and apartment owners. Seth Golding, chairman of the University Area Commission, put it this way. He said, basically, at some whim of raising grade point averages by Gordon Gee, we're going to sacrifice our community. He called it a rather expensive experiment. So has it been tested elsewhere? Do you agree that it's an experiment?
You know, first of all, we haven't done a good job of communicating this to our colleagues. Our issue is not in any way diminishing the neighborhood. It's improving the neighborhood. And by the way, I think if you take a look at what the university has done over the last 20 years since my first foray, when I came in and it was Fallujah out there, which is not what anyone wants to send their kids into. We've done dramatic things. The university has been a fabulous partner. Secondly of all, the truth of the matter is the fact that this kind of living, learning environment we're talking about, a collegiate system, is one which engages not only ourselves, but it will engage our partners across the street. It's about creating an environment in which students are not simply in class, but they are learning and living and creating for 168 hours a week instead of 18 hours in class. The third thing is that it's not about raising GPAs. It's about creating an opportunity for students to really get fully engaged with the institution so that they're not living, they're not scattered, they're fully involved in this kind of an experience. So one of the things you read a lot about is the fact that they're increasingly we're going to have kind of a bifurcated system of the brick universities and the click universities, the click being the online and a variety of other things. The brick universities, in order to be able to be very successful, had to be totally brick, i.e. they have to really be totally engaged in the quality of the undergraduate experience, and we're going to do that. The fourth thing is, I've seen what they've done at the University of Pennsylvania. I've seen what they've done at a number of other institutions. This is what will happen, is that first of all, By getting more of our students to live on or near campus as freshmen and sophomores, they will stay on or near campus as juniors and seniors. Secondly of all, the only people who should be fearful about this are those who have oversold and undernurtured our students and have not been fair to them, because they may be the ones who will be squeezed out. I, for one, would, and I proposed this on a number of occasions, have yet to make this happen, is I would love to be able to have an off-campus program in which we really work with our great landlords to have a system in which we approve the off-campus housing. We will not. This will dramatically, let me underscore this. This, by the economics and every other force, this will dramatically improve the quality of our off-campus areas, particularly as we move toward a more sustained community building program by bringing our faculty and staff and others back in through housing projects. So obviously we have done a very poor job of communicating that. And we need to work with the district and others. We will do so. I just had a meeting this morning. I said, we cannot allow people, our friends, on or near the campus to view us that way. And I will also say that this is my personal stake in the ground. I think everyone knows that when I came here, I put a very strong personal stake during my first term and during my second term about the fact that we're going to create one of the great environments in this country, for our students, and for our faculty, for our staff, and for our community, and we have put millions of dollars and substantial time and resources, and we have a great plan developed by Sasaki, the great land planners, which does not only include the campus but includes our neighborhoods to talk about the nature of improvement. So. The issue of communication we need to deal with. The issue of a whim or about improving grades is absolutely wrong. And by the way, the evidence is very strong on our own campus. I mean, the difference is 15 or 20 percentage points in terms of retention, right, of other things, between those who live in a collegiate system and those who don't live in a collegiate system, just across the street from each other. That in and of itself is a reason for us to be very helpful and very concerned about that.
We have to take a break, but when I get back, I wanted to pick up on that again and talk about what about the students that are at the regional campuses. A lot of them go there because they didn't quite make the grade to get on the main campus, and aren't they a little bit more at risk? So let's talk about a little bit about that when we get back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we tackle the news, the issues, and the stories that you want to know more about. I'm Neil Conan. Join us for analysis, perspective, and voices from across the country. To hear what the country's talking about, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 73 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:21. Sunny skies today and a high of 82. Partly cloudy tonight, cooling off to a low of 61 degrees. Sunshine and a slight chance of rain for Wednesday, a high of 82. A few clouds Wednesday night, a low of 65. And then sunshine looking ahead to Thursday and a warmer day with a high of 87. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is E. Gordon Gee, Dr. E. Gordon Gee. He's president of Ohio State University. We're going to get to some of those calls as soon as possible. I just wanted to follow up on the idea of the regional campuses, and we had callers in the past when you've been on the show complain that their kid had a 3.5. They just weren't in the top 10% of their class. They deserve to be on the main campus as much as anybody does. And why are they being shoved off to the outside?
Well, first of all, they're not being shoved off. They're being shoved off nowhere. Our regional campuses, our smaller campuses are front doors to the university. They are as much a university as is the Columbus campus. I talk about them as various campuses. One is larger than the other. But the resources there, the quality of our faculty, the quality of our teaching, the quality of what we're doing is just as high or maybe even sometimes higher, given the fact they can get very individualized help. And what it is it's a glide path to get into the university. It's a way for students who may not have had as much scholastic success or individual success for them to be able to have an environment which does make access to Ohio State very clear to them. And, you know, we keep the size of this university very limited. Even though it's the largest, most complex university in the country, we're not about growing. We're about continuing our qualitative growth, and so I think that we do an excellent job. But I want to underscore this again. In many ways, my favorite parts of the university are our smaller campuses. I love the intensity of relationships and the ability to be able to individualize the resources that are quite unusual as part of a big university.
Lawrence, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing? And good morning, Dr. Gee.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is a good opportunity for me. It's been in the waiting for years and years. I graduated with honors from the College of Engineering at The Ohio State University under your first reign, and it taught me to be a better person, to not only be a better engineer, but to be a better observer of the world. But there was one thing that always left me with a certain sense of disappointment. I served on the Office of Academic Misconduct as a student appointee, which was a office that oversaw students that made unfortunate mistakes and would have been given consequences for those mistakes in regards to cheating. And one day I was sitting on our meeting, and there was a student that came in that I knew, so I precluded myself from that particular case. And as I sat out in the waiting room with just myself and the secretary, look who comes in, except the president of our fine organization, our fine institution, Dr. Gee. And I got very excited. I said, I'm going to get to meet Dr. Gee and have a conversation. And as he looked at me, the only student in the waiting room at the Office of Academic Misconduct, a look of, I can only describe as, incredible disappointment came across your face. And I just wanted to say, after however many years, Dr. Gee, I didn't cheat. It was, I was precluding myself. So now I feel like I am honest and my conscience is clear.
I didn't know quite where that was going.
What did you say to this guy?
Good for you. Well, I must have thought, oh, no, he's one of those students that I need to at least scowl at. Well, let me tell you something. After all these years, I am smiling. And am I not smiling? I'm crazy. I love you.
Yeah.
Okay, there you are. And I'm glad you're achieving great things. But thanks for the call.
Much.
I love that call. Let me just make a point, which is a very important one, which is that our students do deal directly with students, as you just heard on the telephone call, and we do have a process in place which I think is very, very healthy, and that is that we're a self-disciplining organization.
Lawrence, thanks for that call. You made us laugh. Kelsey from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Kelsey.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Dr. Gee.
Hi, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I was just calling in regards to public transportation. I came from Toledo, where we had the TARDA system available. And now that I am an Ohio State student, I have access to cabs, which gets me from my East Residential home to campus for my classes. And also, CODA is a really great system that Ohio State students have access to. I take CODA to work, and I take it downtown on the weekends. And I just think it's really a great thing that you have put together for students, you know, to get from place to place.
Well, thank you. You know, I think we can do better, though. Our plan is to do much better. You know, I'd love to see light rail in Columbus. I think that I'm a great believer in public transportation. Having lived in Europe, I lived 3 years in Germany, and just having an opportunity to see what can be done there and how it builds the core and how it develops really great neighborhoods. Our bus people, our transportation people do a fabulous job here. I am very impressed, and every once in a while I get on one of those buses and ride around and just the quality of what they do. But we are, through our planning process, we are intending on making Ohio State an even more robust walking campus, and that way we can have transportation be not absolutely central, but be a partner in making this place even more accommodating to students. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kelsey. Have a great year. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to speak to our guest, Dr. E. Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. Ohio Board of Regents Chancellor Jim Petro says universities in Ohio are bogged down with duplicate and out-of-date mandates that cost them time and money. Let's listen.
If universities can operate more nimbly, more flexibly, with more freedom of action, then I think they will save money. They will have more opportunity to enact policies and procedures that allow them to partner with business, whether it be through research and commercialization.
Of course, he's talking about a different kind of university than we have right now. There's a word for it, and it's called Enterprise University. I'm wondering why create another category of university? Why not just change the rules so every university, every public institution in Ohio can avail themselves of the benefits?
Well, I think that that's the intent. That is the intent. I mean, the word enterprise is, I think for some reason or other, they started off using the word several years ago, charter university. And
yeah.
Charter has a connotation of charter schools, a variety of other things of which there are some good and some ill in terms of the way that those are viewed. And so enterprise is simply a way to describing this de-bureaucratization, the simplification process. I'm very enthusiastic about what the chancellor is doing. We don't have... all of the pieces in place. There are still going to be conversations about that. There are pieces that need to be honed and developed and restructured. But saying that, the general thrust is this, and I have advocated this since I came in 1990, is the fact that universities operate better when they are accountable, but not when that they are overregulated. And we kind of have this regulatory atmosphere that we deal with. We deal with the federal regulations, which are terribly onerous, as we know. And then we have the state regulations, which the chancellor is talking about. Then we have our own trustees who impose regulations, and I talk with them about this a lot because sometimes we get over-regulated from internally. But our biggest regulatory problem is our own self. We, you know, as we talk about simplifying the rules at the state level, our biggest challenge is simplifying our own rules. And we, you know, I've talked about it for 3 years. I kind of feel like that I have been that I've been signaling that we're going to do this. This is one of my major, probably my number one issue this year is the fact that we are going to de-bureaucratize this institution. We're going to make it much more simple, much more nimble, and much more able to deal with realities of the world in which we deal now.
When you talk about saving money with more flexibility and freedom of action, is that expected to make a difference to the average student in terms of tuition, or is it just going to generate more revenue for the university?
First of all, let me just point out, and I always get into this, if you take a look, tuition at Ohio State is one of the great we are simply one of the great educational bargains in America, one of the highest quality universities in this country with one of the lowest tuitions. Our tuition has not risen at the rate of inflation over the last 10 years. I'm not certain anyone can say that there has not been any price that has not risen at least the rate of inflation, and ours has not. So number one, let's not say about lowering tuition or anything. We are a great educational bargain. the quality of what we give and the quality of the product is extraordinary. Secondly of all, any monies that we save will be reinvested in the qualitative aspects of the institution. We want to get better. 10% of our budget comes from the state of Ohio. Even as great as our public officials have been, and we have been very well supported over the last several years comparatively and in a bipartisan legislative effort, and our new governor has been just fiercely supportive of higher education, that means we're still going to have to be very, 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 very aggressive in terms of pursuing other sources in order to be able to sustain and grow the university. So, yes, I mean, if we can save money, then we reinvest it. It's not about saving and putting it in the bank.
By going in this direction, however you want to call it, do you foresee a day when the university won't need even 10% of its budget covered by the state budget?
Well, I would never. I'm one of those guys who believes that that the people of the state need to invest in their universities. Ohio State is the single largest economic engine in the state, directly or indirectly. We also are the cultural and intellectual center of the state. If this country and the state is to move forward, its university in particular, its major research and land-grant university, need to be absolutely central to the strategy for the future of the state. And we want to be, and we are, and we will be. And so, therefore, we also need to be an investment category.
Charles in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, and I was proud to have been invited to my grandson's graduation this past Sunday, and I am so proud that we have Dr. Gee as our president. I watched in awe as he stood up there and gave a wonderful speech, and he shook hands with every single person that graduated that came through that line, and a lot of the participants that graduated even gave him a big hug. This is a person that is so involved with us here at Ohio State. We're so lucky to have him. I am an owner of a business in the area that Dr. Gee was involved in developing along High Street. He took time out to visit our location, which was called the Charlie Bear, and talked to all of our employees and the participants that were there and gave us compliments on how wonderful we were doing for the university area. The people of Ohio should be so proud that we have a person like him as our president of the Ohio State University. Thank you.
Thanks, Charles.
Hey, Charles, thank you. And he wasn't my brother or my mother.
Checks in the mail, right?
No, I appreciate it. And I remember Charlie Bears very well. But you know, that's a lovely thing to say. And I really appreciate that. Thank you very much, Charles.
Let's go back to the regional campus issue. Bela of Columbus, you're on the show. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Gee.
Hi.
Appreciate the time. I want to let you know I'm a two-time dropout of Ohio State.
Third time's going to be the charm. No dropping out this time.
We'll see. If I go back for my third time, it'll be for a PhD, which brings me to my question. My wife is actually an assistant dean there, and we live just north of campus. We believe in the area. Actually live a couple houses down from Mr. Golding on the University Area Commission.
Oh.
My question is this, is when I decided to go back and finish my undergraduate, I'm a social worker, and my issue was I could have gone to Ohio State for half off through my spouse, but there was no program set up for returning adults, at least in the social work program. Either for my undergraduate or when I got my master's, I ended up getting my master's at Case Western. They have a long-distance program. And for me, it was very frustrating because I like, you know, I'm a Buckeye fan. My wife works for the university. My dad graduated from the university. But as large as it was, there was nothing in town except for Capital and up in Cleveland, there's Case, for those of us who are in our 30s who want to go back and who are working with a family and go to school. And is that something that you guys are thinking about?
Oh, yeah. You know, I really appreciate the call because the notion of the traditional student being the 18 to 22-year-old is no longer the case. The the increasing traditional student is precisely what you just described, a 30-year-old maybe divorced mother of two who wants to go back and get her degree, or X, Y, and Z. And so we very much need to expand the opportunities at the university in so many different ways. And we are doing, in certain areas, we're doing very well. In other areas, again, the vast nature of the institution, we're not all marching to the same tune at the same time. And that, of course, is a problem. But we are moving very aggressively in that direction of providing a much broader-based opportunity for students and adult students to become part of the university.
He mentioned, Bela mentioned the Case Western University was able to offer him an online course. How do you rate OSU in that score in terms of online education?
I think we have a ways to go. I mean, we are into distance education, as they call it, or online education, but certainly we have a ways to go. And the question for us is the fact that we also protect our brand, if I want to use it in those commercial terms. Ohio State is known as one of the really truly high-quality universities in this country, and so we want to make certain that whatever we do meets the Ohio State standard. It's not simply about offering a degree. It's about offering an Ohio State degree with Ohio State requirements and expectations, and so that's the reason we've been a little cautious.
Thanks, Bela, for that question. Jane and Lewis Center, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You want to go back to the issue of the sophomore housing?
Yes, please. Actually, our daughter's going to be a freshman here in a couple of weeks at Ohio State. And we live locally, but we're letting her do the on-campus experience because it's very important. But it's extremely expensive, and I'm wondering how much more that will contribute to the university, because I know we equate it to pretty much the cost of a luxury apartment is what we're spending to live in a dormitory.
Well, you know, if it's a dormitory, then you are it is a cost. But if it's an experience, which is surrounding her in terms of what is taking place for her in with 1,000 different student groups, the opportunities in terms of culture and plays and concerts and daily activities, then it is a very inexpensive endeavor. And I think that's the way that we need to look at it. It is an investment. But by the way, our housing costs are relatively modest compared with most with whom we compare ourselves around the country, but I want people to get into the mindset that this is about being a very significant part of the educational experience, and so it is not about simply living or eating. It's about that experience.
I mentioned this to Mayor Mike Coleman, Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman, and I think I've asked you about this before too. But any thoughts about building or having housing in downtown Columbus, where a lot of students feel comfortable in an urban downtown atmosphere?
I think we'll explore everything. You know, we are very committed to the center of the city. We're very committed to the city, period. And the mayor and I are great partners and have a great personal friendship. And so the answer is any kinds of things that we can think about that would help the city and help the university, we'll take a look at. You know, we have an urban arts space downtown, mm-hmm. which is fabulous. We have, mm-hmm. obviously, our extension center in the Near East Side. We have programs, and we take our drums downtown and a variety of other things. So we're really engaging ourselves in the city in a number of ways, and housing might be one of the ways to think about that.
Jane in Lewis Center, thanks for that call. Good luck to your daughter as she starts her college career.
She's going to love it here, by the way.
At Ohio State. We're going to take a break. My guest is Dr. E. Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The next Fresh Air, our food week continues with the story of bananas, why they often don't taste like they used to, and why their future is endangered. We'll hear from Dan Capel, author of Banana, The Fate of the Fruit That Changed the World. Also, New Yorker science writer Michael Spector on the possibility of creating hamburgers in test tubes. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join WOSU for a Chefs in the City Ohio beer tasting in the outdoor beer garden at the historic Granville Inn on September 14th. Local food hors d'oeuvres by Chef Chad Lavely will be paired with a selection of beers from four of Ohio's best breweries. Brewmaster Matthew Barbie from Lancaster's Rock Mill Brewery will co-host this exclusive event. Tickets are on sale now for $45 each. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve your tickets.
Support for 89.7 comes from Yoga on High, proud to host Rodney Yee and Colleen Sedman for an evening of yoga September 9th. More details on attending at 291-4444 or yogaonhigh.com.
Sunshine today, a high of 82, partly cloudy tonight, an overnight low cooling off to 61 degrees. Partly sunny for Wednesday, there is about a 20% chance of rain and a high of 82. And clouds Wednesday night, a low of 65. All Sides continues on 89.7.
Welcome back. My guest, Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. We have calls I want to get to, but first, I want to talk about something. Ohio State University's chief financial officer, Jeff, is it Chattis?
Chattis, yes.
Chattis mentioned at a Brown Bag staff meeting last week that the university is considering privatizing its parking operation. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, does that mean that the administrative functions of the parking facilities, the permitting and the staff parking and all that sort of thing, would be assumed by a private company?
I don't think that there. I don't think people will be able to tell any difference. Again, we're taking a look at a variety of things. Remember, I mean, I'm kind of outrageous about this. I think we need to take a look at everything because we need to be focused on our core function. Our function is teaching history and English and having great medical schools and doing the kinds of things we should be doing. And anytime we can take a look at things that distract us from doing that, or that we can use the resources to build up our graduate, undergraduate programs to support our faculty, then those are the things we should take a look at. We have not made any decision about that. But I've said on this program before that I'm perfectly willing to take a look at selling our airports or our golf courses, a variety of other things. I think in today's world, you have to be very willing to take a look at anything that allows you to make certain you're supporting the core mission of the university.
It could, you know, they're talking about privatizing or leasing out the turnpike, for mm-hmm. example, and one of the fears of that is that it will increase the tolls for especially commercial operations that use the turnpike mm-hmm. Commercially. If there's something like privatization of the parking, operation, what about the cost of students? What if there's an increase?
We're calculating that all okay. in there. This is not about creating a business to make a buck. This is about being more effective and more efficient and maybe more cost effective. One of my great friends was a man by the name of Monroe Carroll, who was the parking king. He owned Central Parking and more parking spaces than anyone in the world. And he always pointed out at Vanderbilt how much more expensive it was for Vanderbilt to run their parking, and therefore how much more we were costing the students and faculty than if he ran it for us. So, voila.
Matt in Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Matt.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Matt.
Good morning, Dr. D.
Hi, good morning, Matt. How are you?
Just fine.
Good.
I've got a question about my daughter, who's a senior at Hilliard.
Uh-huh.
And
you know,
a
great high school, by the way. We love those Hilliard kids.
By golly. But I think she's going to be right on the cusp of maybe getting into main campus. And so if she doesn't, you know, she could go to Delaware and Marion like a lot of kids do. And then a lot of them go to Columbus State. And I know you have a really good relationship with Columbus State. You can go down there for a year or two and everything transfers up. And I'm trying to decide what's the best way to go here.
Well, you're asking about two of my children here. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, first of all, tell your daughter to work hard. She's in the application process, and again, remember the point that I made that going to one of our smaller campuses is like going to the university. It's not like going to the university. It is the university because that's the university. We are not bounded by Columbus. We're bounded by the state. And saying that, we do have a wonderful relationship. In fact, Dr. David Harrison, the president of Columbus State, and I this evening are going to meet with our preferred pathway students. This is this kind of seamless, first of its kind in the country relationship. You know, there are a lot of articulation agreements between universities and community colleges, but this one is one in which, in many ways, Columbus State is not only our partner, but is really a system, a part of a system of the university, and very engaged with us. So she's going to have if she has choices, either one of those are excellent choices, I can assure you.
All righty. Well, thank you very much.
You're
Appreciate
welcome.
It.
Thank you, Matt. Good question. Corey in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning, Dr. Gee.
Good morning, Corey.
I am a student, a lifelong resident of Columbus, undergrad student in the Glenn School of Public Affairs, which I'm really pleased with. My question revolves around, I guess, Ohio State and the economics of Columbus. I mean, I think it's not overstating it to say there isn't a Columbus as we know it without the university. And I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on the university's relationship with the city, retaining students, prevent brain drain with graduates from the university. The city's done very well compared to other Midwestern cities through the recession. And I'm just curious to know if there are mechanisms and programs in place to retain undergraduates and graduate students, and just to hear your thoughts on your relationship
with
the city.
I mean, great question, and the answer is yes, yes, and yes. So, I mean, we are very committed to having a great relationship with the city. All the time, and it's a very meaningful thing to me that we cannot have a great university without being in a great city. It just is impossible. You can't have a great university that is surrounded by a decaying city. And so the relationship between the university and the city is enormously important. Number one. Number two is that in that regard, what we're really trying to do is to think about how we can even further develop those relationships. Remember, I talked about planning. I've talked about the working in public schools. I've talked about all of the kinds of issues that I think are important in terms of developing the quality of life. And then it is about creating jobs. It's about creating jobs in Ohio. It's about creating jobs in Columbus. I love to tell the story that the university residence is in Bexley. When I lived there during the 1990s, it was a place in which there were a lot of wonderful people, but the age profile was a bit older. I come back now, there's all these young families and tricycles and bikes and a variety of other things moving around, and what has happened is that these are a lot of Ohioans who, when given the opportunity to return to Ohio, have moved away from Goldman Sachs and away from big law firms in Chicago and Los Angeles. They moved back, and so we're very dedicated to putting up a picket fence around Ohio to keep our talent here and to keep them very, very happy. That talent is the economic engine of the future, and that's what we have to do.
Thanks, Corey, for your question. 614-292-8513. We have about 8 minutes left with Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. We have a couple emails about This American Life. A personal question for Dr. Gee from JB on Facebook. I should say one from Facebook and one's an email. You and your daughter were featured on NPR's This American Life some time ago. She was talking about letters her mother wrote to her. How are you and she doing now? Did she ever share any of her mother's letters with you?
Well, Rebecca is a remarkable person. You know, I think that I am one of those people who have been inspired by their children, and I'm inspired by my daughter. As you know, her mother died when she was 15, and then her husband whom she met at the Harvard Medical School, died in an accident after they'd been married 18 months. She's happily married, living in New Orleans. She's the Assistant Secretary for Women's Health, a big job for the state of Louisiana, and practicing medicine at Louisiana State University. Other than that, LSU connection, she's great. No, I'm just kidding you. And is truly doing remarkable things. She has never shared the letters with me, and I've never really asked her to do so. That's an issue in which she continues to think about. She has been given an offer to write a wonderful book about it, but she's very heavily engaged in her new life, and I think that she will eventually do that. Segment on This American Life has brought us tremendous numbers of new friends, and she gets opportunities all the time to go and speak about it. I do too. I let her carry on the speaking engagements. Her mother was a remarkable person. The fact that she wrote these letters, knowing that she was terminal, but yet the power of what that means to us has still been something that we talk about once in a while.
Thanks for that Facebook question. Rob in Blacklick, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call and for the opportunity to speak with Dr. Gee. Just recently there's been a little discussion here on air of privatization and of certain services. It made me wonder if perhaps these are not opportunities for training, hands-on training, with principles of business management, and while at the same time, providing some work study opportunities for the student, population. If this is not already done so, or if this is not already being done, is there a consideration being given to that route?
Oh, the reason Ann will tell you, I'm sitting here shaking my head vigorously up and down. The answer is, first of all, great idea, great question, and the answer is yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But we do it within the university. I mean, at the Fisher College of Business, we have a number of our folks at both the undergraduate level and our MBA students who are doing all sorts of wonderful things, providing hands-on experience to them to be able to actually work with committed community resources, businesses, et cetera. And one of the things we've discovered, of course, is the fact that our students are so daggone bright that they can bring better ideas to us about how we ought to be doing our own business that we can sometimes do ourselves, that kind of the internal idea consulting relationship. So that is precisely what we're doing. We have a number of different avenues that takes place, but Fisher, our College of Business, is really the primary source of creating those kinds of opportunities.
Thanks a lot for that question, Rob. 614-292-8513. Get your call in soon. We won't be taking any in a few minutes. Let's see. Erica? In Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Erica.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question. I work for OSU Extension, and I have many colleagues around the state who are unable to use the generous OSU employee tuition benefit because of where they live and work. Are there any plans to expand the benefit so employees in other parts of the state, specifically the southeastern where there aren't any locations, branches right now, so they can take advantage of the benefit?
We have a task force that's taking a look at our educational benefits. The answer is that we have thought about that. We have talked about that. We've thought about it. Obviously, the advantage of our tuition opportunities is for us to help to increase the opportunities for our own faculty and staff. The difference that we would think about is if it is necessary for improving the quality of your job, then we might think about moving it elsewhere to other places. If you're in southeastern Shawnee State or whatever, but it would be for very specific reasons, I think, would be the way that we'd consider that. But I appreciate the question. And it is, one of the things that she reminds us all of, the fact that Ohio State is in every corner of the state. Our faculty and staff are dealing with problems in all 88 counties of the state.
Thank you, Erica, for that call. Jennifer, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Dr. Gee.
Hi, Jennifer.
I have a question about How Ohio State is working with the high schools here in the state to help students who have that dream to go to Ohio State. I'm an undergrad graduate from Ohio State, and I was able to go on to graduate school in another state to prepare them for the application process, not only for the undergraduate degree, but also if they have dreams of going on for a graduate degree. I found that I really lacked the resources in knowing what the process was. And I find that with students here I work with, I actually teach at Columbus State, and I find a lot of the students here just aren't knowledgeable about the process and what it takes to have a really outstanding application.
Well, first of all, shame on us if we're not being really forthcoming and helpful, as you can imagine. That's important to us. Secondly of all, I know that Dolan Ivanovich, who really runs all of our admissions processes, along with Dr. Mabel Freeman, are very committed to doing this. I was just in Cleveland, in the suburbs, in which we had 200 or 300 or 400 people show up, families and friends, and talking about the application process. These were juniors thinking about being seniors, talking about this. We had these seminars and opportunities for information all over the state. And we also do this with college counselors, but even with all of that, I think that we have a challenge to make certain that we do that. One of the great things is the fact that Ohio State is an immensely important and popular institution. We have vast numbers of students who want to come here. Now we need to make certain that they get the information they need to have. We're doing a number of things, but I can assure you that we'll continue to hone and develop those relationships.
Thanks, Jenna, for that call. You know, I should have brought this up earlier. I think it was when Erica called about OSU employees hither and yon in Ohio. You're going to host faculty on a two-day road trip to Central and Northern Ohio.
Starting tomorrow, right.
Yeah. What's that about?
Yeah, it's a Rhodes Scholar Tour, R-O-A-D-S, Rhodes Scholar Tour. The thing about it is we hire faculty and staff from all over the world. But we belong to 11 million Ohioans, and I like to remind the people who come to work with us that this institution was built on the tenacity and hard work of these great people in Ohio, and had them to see Ohio. I just got off my tour. You know, I tour the state every summer, get in a van, and tour the state. I was in 47 counties. I traveled 2,800 miles. I held 76 events around the state. And I start off with these, Ann, and say, you know, why am I doing this? And by the end of the summer, it's one of the most meaningful experiences I've had, because of the fact that I'm able to see the university in work and in play and in process in every corner of the state.
You're going all the way to Stone Laboratory.
Yes, we are, right. We, of course, are both a land-grant university, but we're also a sea-grant university.
Right.
Not many people know that. And Jeff Reuter and his team run one of the great laboratories in this country.
Well, Dr. Gee, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Honored to be here, Ann. Thank you for inviting me.
That's Gordon Gee. He's president of Ohio State University. Thanks for all the great calls and questions today, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820, Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.